afternoon. So I'm Carolyn Swenson, and I work at the Colorado Clinical Guidelines Collaborative. We're a nonprofit working on quality improvement in Colorado. And I'll tell you more about what we did as part of this project and what Diana's role here is, too. So this project was supported by the Colorado Trust, a foundation in Colorado that supports healthcare improvement. So the three organizations in this project were the Colorado Immunization Information System, and Diana will be telling you more about that organization at the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment. I'm from Colorado Clinical Guidelines Collaborative, and then we had an evaluator on the project from the University of Colorado Denver, and they work on, Colorado Health Outcomes works on evaluating healthcare improvement projects. So I'm not going to spend any more time on the overview of immunization recall, but it is a best practice, and we think it can lead to other improvements besides just immunization improvement. And there's references in the presentation if you want to review any of those references. So now I'm going to have Diana tell you briefly about the Colorado Immunization Registry.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Diana Herrero, and I'm the manager for the Colorado Immunization Information System. I am here presenting on behalf of Kathleen Haas, so if you have any really specific questions about this project, you may want to direct them to Carolyn. The Colorado Immunization Information System, it's a population-based secure system that consolidates immunization records for all Colorado residents. It's private and confidential. And we also receive weekly demographic and birth dose data from our vital records department. The thing to note here is that the system is voluntary. We don't have any legislation that mandates that providers have to be part of the registry. And we're also considered an opt-out state. So parents, if they want to have their children or their own information out of the system, then they can sign an opt-out form. So as far as background, the registry has been around since 1996. It actually started from a five-year project funded by the CDC to promote rural immunizations in Colorado. At the end of that five-year project is when the system actually became web-based, and the following year that system was recognized by the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment as the statewide registry for the state. Originally, it was operated out of the University of Colorado Health Sciences Center, and in 2007, the registry was designated to be a lifelong registry, not focusing just on pediatrics and adolescents, but also adults as well. And in that legislation, it also gave authority to the Colorado Department of Health to operate the registry. And so it was in December of just this past year, which is the same amount of time that I've been involved in the program, the registry was transferred over to the Colorado Department of Public Health. So the core functions of the registry is to, one, provide program support. It allows us to analyze data so we can look at pockets of need within our state and know where to focus outreach efforts. Obviously provides a consolidated immunization record for persons within the registry. If additional information like manufacturer and lot numbers are also included in a record, then it could be an official medical record. It'll help clinical staff provide decision support. They can screen persons' immunizations records to see if there's anything that's missing. You can also print out official school forms for either childcare or camp or school to prove that the child is up to date on their immunization record. A parent can call and request a record from their healthcare provider. You can do inventory management. If you also provide lot numbers, that type of thing, you can generate recall notices. You can also take a file from the immunization registry and import it into COCASA for assessment activities. And then it can also be used for emergencies. We've done some work with the Emergency Preparedness Division as far as pandemic preparedness. But another real-world application was during Katrina, when there were a lot of folks that were displaced during Katrina. Other states that were receiving victims were able to go into the state immunization registry for Louisiana and Mississippi and look to see if kids were up to date on their immunizations and if they needed anything additional. So there's a variety of places that we receive data from for the registry, obviously providers, hospitals, clinics, vital records. Like I said, we get a weekly data upload from them. We also receive data from HCPF, which is the Healthcare Policy and Financing Department of the state, on Medicaid and what will soon be also CHP Plus data. We also receive data from HMOs and health insurers. Schools, school districts specifically, are allowed to access data from the registry, but they've only got read-only access and to date haven't been able to input information into the system. Persons can look at the information, they themselves can't enter anything in, and then we also get information from health info systems like COREO, which is the Colorado Regional Health Information System, and then there's other groups like Indian Health Services. We're getting ready to form a partnership with them as well. So our current saturation rates for providers, these are groups that we actively had been pursuing to get them onto the registry. We're at 100% for both community health and public health, 68% for rural health, 80% for pediatrics, and then 39% for family practice. Since the registry has been transitioning from the University of Colorado Health Sciences Center over to the health department, there's been kind of a lull period where we haven't been able to do a lot of active implementation. And so we're getting ready to ramp up again to start bringing on new providers to round out these, but then also bring in additional providers like internal medicine, OBGYNs, that type of thing. These are just some of our production stats. Out of all the various sites that I just mentioned, we've got a 57% participation rate and over 1.8 million records and over 21 million immunization services. So how that translates into our 2010 objective, we are currently at 82% for all children 0 to 6 years old that have two or more immunizations, within the system. Ooh, and that's out of place. Okay, interesting. All right, some of my slides are missing. These last two slides just goes over the other types of recall activities in general that can be provided from the registry. Provider-based, you're going to hear more about that particular project from Carolyn. We also have the ability to do centralized recall, and that's when one site performs recall for another site. In doing so with our registry, we have a specific delegation form that allows a site to give permission to another site to do recall for them. And then obviously we do geographic recall, pulling information by zip code. There are several counties that do recall within Colorado currently, and our Sentinel site grant, there's several counties down within that area that also perform recall on a monthly basis for 19 to 20 month olds. So I'm gonna turn it back over to Carolyn so she can talk to you specifically about a recall project that was done.
So this project is specifically a provider-based recall project that was focused on two main goals: implementing immunization recall for 9 to 10 month and 19 to 20 month old children in diverse practice settings, meaning private practices and public health settings, and to assess the time, resources, challenges, and benefits associated with starting recall through this immunization registry. And this was a very qualitative-oriented project. So the project was carried out from 2006 to 2008 in five counties in western Colorado that are primarily rural, fast-growing counties with a diverse population and a somewhat transitory population. And we carried out the project in 11 different clinics and county public health offices. And at each site, we introduced the recall process using the immunization registry and then gradually turned the process over to the clinic or the public health site. We tracked the implementation and sustainability of recall in each practice, but we did not track immunization outcomes. And all of these sites had adopted the registry and were reasonably comfortable with using it. All did manual entry. In other words, they did not transfer data from an electronic record into the registry. And none were doing recall at the beginning of the project with the statewide immunization registry, but some were doing manual reminders, sending out reminder letters as a child was coming up for their next immunizations. We did approach some sites that did not participate, some larger sites and some smaller sites that were clinics, and they cited different reasons, staff turnover, and one important one is that many, or some of them cited that they were adopting an electronic medical record, and that was occupying all of their time and effort, and they really couldn't take on another project. So it kind of points out that technology can be great, but it can also be very demanding. So at each site, we followed these steps. We reviewed their current process of delivering and documenting immunizations. We did an immunization data quality review, which involved comparing the immunization records that are in the registry to what was in the clinic chart or electronic record. And then we, after comparing the two, we turned it over to the clinics to update and make any corrections in addresses or immunization data. We selected the cohorts to recall, which in most cases were the two age cohorts that I mentioned earlier. We developed and translated a HIPAA-compliant recall notice, translated into Spanish. Some used the State Health Department's standard recall notice, but many clinics wanted their own customized recall notice. And then we implemented recall, which I did for the clinics in the first few rounds of recall, and worked with the clinic to monitor the follow-up, such as bad addresses, children who'd moved or gone elsewhere. And then I trained the clinic staff and turned over the recall process to the clinics and helped them establish a sustainability plan for going forward. And I'm going to profile or summarize for you several of the sites, a profile of four of the sites, just to give you a sense of the variability in these recall startup experiences. Site number one is a small family practice in a small town. They used paper charts that were somewhat disorganized. It's an area that has considerable immunization resistance that the clinic constantly has to deal with, working with parents to persuade them to immunize. They had very incomplete data in their in the registry. They were behind about 3 months on entering their immunization data. And they actually spent a month and a half cleaning up that data, and as part of the project, we were able to pay for them to hire a college student to actually do data entry for many, many hours. They, when we finally implemented recall, identified from 3 to 12 children per recall run that were behind on their immunizations. And in the process of doing the recall, they did begin to standardize their immunization documentation process. They started to follow a more standard process that all nurses would document in one place in the charts and in the registry, and started to improve their data quality somewhat, we hope. And the outcomes for that site, that their plan at the end of the project when I turned over recall to the clinic was that they would do monthly recall, and after they had entered all their data into the registry, when the evaluator followed up with them 6 months later, they had done no recalls. Actually, she checked again in 12 months, no recalls in 12 months. Site number two, a large private pediatric practice in a medium-sized town, and this practice served patients from a very large geographic area. They were the only pediatric practice in the area. They had up to 6 weeks of a wait for a well-child visit, and they did require that a child have a well-child visit in order to receive immunizations. They had adopted an electronic medical record just before the project, and it was a very difficult transition, much more time-consuming and troubled than they expected. They had a non-standardized documentation process for their immunizations. Each nurse had a different way of keeping track of shots she'd given and how they got them into the registry and when. They had incomplete data in the registry, and when we finally cleaned up the data and got recall started, they identified 30 to 65 children per recall batch, so quite a big yield. Their plan at the end of the project was to do monthly recall on 19 to 20 month old children and to review their registry records on all children. Every time they did recall, they wanted to double check that all the data was correct, comparing their charts to the registry. After we transitioned the recall to that clinic, they did 8 recalls in 9 months, so they kept very close to the plan they established. Site number 3 was a large county public health office in a medium-sized town serving a fairly unstable patient population, a lot of migrant farm workers in the area. When we reviewed their data in the registry, they had excellent data quality, but they hadn't been keeping up the addresses. In this immunization registry, the clinic has to update addresses, especially if they want to do recall along with entering immunizations. And they were motivated through the process of data quality, the data quality review, to comprehensively review all records for their patient population age 0 to 18 and update all immunizations that were that didn't match completely between their records and the registry and update all addresses. And when we started recall on that site, they identified 4 to 13 children per recall. Their plan at the end of the project was to do monthly recall on 9 to 10 month olds, every other month. And when we followed up, when the evaluator followed up, they had done only one recall in 9 months. Site number 4, near the end of the project, we noticed how much time it was taking for me to work closely with these clinics, and that in the real world that would not be realistic without having special funding for a project like this. So we designed a method that we decided to try in the last 2 sites that we called rapid recall implementation, where I went in only once and met with the clinic and reviewed their data, taught them about recall, helped them get started, and then kept in touch by phone as they started the process on their own. So this site that I'm going to profile for you is a medium-sized family practice in a small town, but serving a very large geographic area. The only other immunization provider in the area was the county public health office. They used the immunization registry as their only immunization record. They did not also document immunizations in a paper chart. They had a very standardized process. Every medical assistant and nurse understood the steps to carrying out immunizations, when and where you document. They didn't go home at the end of the day without putting the immunization data into the registry. So we used the registry to do a spot check of their immunization data, and it was very complete. And then we did a quick training, and we started recall that same day, and they had only 1 to 2 children of all ages, 0 to 18, who needed any immunizations or had immunizations recommended from the registry. And their plan at the end of the project was to do quarterly recall of children age 0 to 18 years. And after we transitioned the process to this clinic and the evaluator checked back, they had done 2 recalls in 6 months, so they were keeping up with their plan. So one of the things we focused on in this project was how much time does it really take to do recall. I tracked my time and as much as I could, the clinic time. I devised methods for keeping in touch with them so they were used to reporting to me how much time did it really take to update all that immunization data and to do recall, to print out the letters, mail them, check the bad addresses, etc. And we kept track of the time to develop and translate the notice. So all the implementation activities were tracked for their time. And the range was vast, I think, 12 to 126 hours to start up and do recall. And 5 of the 11 sites needed 40 to 60 hours. So a considerable amount of time, especially if you're a small clinic and the staff have many, many responsibilities. So when we compared the data in the clinic charts to the registry, we looked more closely at a subset of the clinics, 6 of them. And when we first did a comparison, more than 1,000 of the children who are identified through the recall functionality of the registry, 53% of those had immunizations recommended. But once the clinics actually reviewed their data on that on that subset of children, only 37% of them actually needed immunization. So it corrected the actual immunization recall by a considerable amount to do this data quality review. So in summary, as far as the maintenance, of the 11 sites, two of them had no maintenance at all of recall after we left. Three sites had what we called low recall, you know, one or two recalls after we left, moderate at two sites, and high at four sites. So considerable variability in being able to maintain the recall process. And the barriers, as the evaluator discussed these outcomes with the clinics, had very open-ended conversations with the clinics and the people who were doing the recall. Time was a number one barrier. Just, you know, it was on their mind to do recall, but week after week they just didn't have the time. Having good systems in place, you know, prompts on a calendar or something coinciding with the beginning or the end of a month in order to do recall and process these letters and engaging other staff in the clinic. So the need for a real system to carry out recall was clear. And also for some clinics, the actual yield of the recall was pretty small, only identifying 3-4 children. And in some small towns, they tend to know these families quite well and really felt like sending a letter was kind of artificial when you just run into each other in town anyway. So some of the lessons we learned doing recall through the immunization registry, it's actually very easy to perform. The recall function itself takes 2 or 3 minutes, but it could be challenging to incorporate it into an office workload. It definitely requires dedicated staff time, and management has to authorize that staff be allowed to carry out this recall function. It definitely improves immunization data quality and completeness. It helps clinics define their active patient population, and you can possibly see how that would have implications beyond just immunizations to know who are our active patients, but also for forecasting your need for vaccines, for planning ahead for ordering vaccines. It can lead to an improved clinic process. Some clinics definitely grew frustrated with their inconsistent processes for documenting immunizations and actually had staff meetings where they said, you know, we're going to do this one way from now on in our clinic. And that proved to be quite useful in those sites. Staff turnover is a challenge. Sometimes we had someone up and trained and they were comfortable and were doing recall, and then they would move on to a different position in the town or even in the clinic, and there was just a vacancy then that there was really no one to take over, or the training process hadn't occurred. And it may be less useful in sites with a smaller number of pediatric patients. For example, family practices have so many competing demands. Just briefly, we did an additional mini project as part of this project just to examine qualitatively some of the attitudes in this part of Colorado about recall by key informant interviews with parents and with providers, mostly physicians. And I spoke to these folks on the phone and found overall very, very strong support for a statewide immunization registry and for recall. And even parents who are somewhat resistant to immunization still said, yeah, I think it's great if someone's helping to look after my child's healthcare needs, even if I decide not to get all those immunizations. And even the physicians whose practices had not yet adopted the registry voiced strong support for a statewide registry and for recall, said we know it's the right thing to do. So the take-home messages from this project is that provider-based recall was successful in some clinics, but not consistently applied to the maximal effect that where we would have expected it to really significantly improve immunization rates. And some of the other highlights I wanted to just mention about this project are that, in general, the public health sites had a somewhat easier time grasping the importance of recall. In other words, looking at your patient population from a public health perspective naturally came more easily to the public health sites, whereas the private clinics were more likely to to struggle with that a little bit in some cases and see their patients more as just individual patients and not take a population approach to immunizations. As I already mentioned, having a standardized process for immunization documentation and the recall function and process was incredibly important if a practice was going to sustain this. I already mentioned the benefits of clarifying your active patient population, which has benefits even beyond the immunization benefits. Another thing that we noticed is that some clinics struggled a bit with the concept of the timeliness of immunization. So even though a child was not technically late on their immunizations, the recall function would point out that it's time now to give the next series of immunizations. And they would, for various reasons, they say, well, I think we'll just wait. You know, why do we want to call the child in before they are really late technically? And that was a somewhat difficult concept to get across. And in some cases, clinics noticed missed opportunities. Many times when they'd seen the child and they could have immunized as they reviewed their data. And that large pediatric practice that required a well child check, I think I don't know if they still do that, but it did illustrate for them that if they could have relaxed that a little bit, they probably could have gotten some of those kids immunized when they'd seen them for other reasons. So that's the conclusion of this presentation. Thank you very much.
Okay, well, we have some time for questions, and there's a mic in the middle of the room. So if you'd like to use the mic, so it's recorded on the session, please step up. You can please say who your question's directed to, or all of them.
Hi, I'm Laura Santilli from the New York State Immunization System. This is actually for Leila. If I read your slide correctly, I think from the provider perspective, that going on the money is always really, show me the money, show me how this is going to work. So thinking from the provider perspective and using that as ammunition, so to speak, it looked like on one of your slides you showed an increase of billing of about $15,000, if I remember, but the actual reimbursement is lower. Did you investigate why? Do you know why that was the case?
We're actually currently doing data analysis from this summer, but what we realized, sometimes providers billed for more than the insurance plan actually allowed. So that was the biggest difference between the amount that was billed and the amount that was reimbursed.
Okay, so it wasn't something where they were actually immunizing appropriately and then they were deferred because of that.
It was typically that they were billed for more than the insurance policy allowed.
Okay, good. I think that goes right towards what we're hearing from the providers is that there's a lot of reimbursement issues. So, okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Stanley Schaefer from the University of Rochester, New York. And in that same regard, question for Leila. When you look at the reimbursement and the monetary aspects of your study, you broke out the cost of purchasing the vaccine and the cost of the reminder recall effort, but you didn't break out the cost of immunizing. And that's the nursing time, the rent, the costs associated with refrigeration of vaccines and all of that. Economists generally will also want that broken out. And have you looked at that?
We did capture that information. We haven't currently analyzed it. We did capture how much additional staff time was expended on the project. We will look at overhead and electricity and all those things. We just have not yet had a chance to factor those in.
I wanted to ask folks from Colorado. As a pediatrician working in a health system where we use electronic medical records, there's a big problem between the electronic medical records being able to communicate with the immunization registry and vice versa. Practices don't want to have to enter it into two separate electronic systems. And so they want to do one or the other. Generally into the electronic medical record with hopes of then dumping that information into the immunization registry. Some registries now have that capability, but very few have the capability to sent the information in the opposite direction from the registry to the electronic medical records. I didn't know what your situation was in Colorado.
We actually do have that capability. I don't think many sites request that they input information into our registry and then export it to their EMR. But we do that for some sites.
And some of the clinics that we worked with in this project definitely cited that as something they would also prefer. And I can't speak to the status of the process of building that interoperability or ability to transfer from the registry to the EMR, but I believe it's being attempted and it can be costly, but it definitely was cited by those that want to use an EMR that, you know, we don't want to enter data twice.